In life and recovery, every day is a little different. Embrace the good days, the not so good days, and the challenges, and acknowledge how you overcame them. Find the path to recovery that works for you. Learn more at cdc.gov/stopoverdose.
What's better than watching your team win? Winning money while you do it. I'm Jim Costa, and on Cash the Ticket, Mike Valeni and I give you the edge to make every game playable. College football, NFL, we're breaking it all down game by game. Your podcast feed is going to be filled, and you're going to love it. You can click on the games you care about. We do it all. With our analysis, we're finding games that other people aren't talking about. We're turning every Saturday and every Sunday into days where you got a chance to win. Don't just sit on the sidelines. Cash the Ticket with us. Follow Cash the Ticket in the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
My dad works in B2B marketing. He came by my school for career day and said he was a big ROAS man. Then he told everyone how much he loved calculating his return on ad spend. My friends still laugh at me to this day.
Not everyone gets B2B, but with LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people who do. Get a $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/results to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/results. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be.
Hello, everybody. We're back because the guy I'm going to have on today, Drew, who's always on now.
The guy.
Yeah. So look, today we're going to discuss the Manti Te'o documentary that's on Netflix. It's part of the Untold series on Netflix. The first two episodes are about Manti Te'o. I'm just going to read the description from Netflix, since I think most of you listening probably understand and know at least most of the Manti Te'o story. This is what he says. This is what Netflix says. Born into a Hawaiian paradise, All-American football standout Manti Te'o leads a simple life summed up in just three words: faith, family, football. We've heard those a lot, Drew. College football's golden boy could do no wrong, but when tragedy strikes, the increased scrutiny of his online relationship causes a media maelstrom that threatens his future and legacy. Featuring in-depth interviews with Manti Te'o and the person behind the online identity, Renaya Naya Tuiasa Sopa. So let's roll the intro music. All right, Drew, you and I both watched both of these episodes on the Netflix documentary, and I'm going to ask you, what was your initial reaction to everything you learned in the documentary, and what was any of it a shock to maybe perceptions that you had beforehand?
Shocking, I'm not totally sure about that one just yet. I think I'm still digesting it just a bit, but what was interesting about it is that I'm not someone that generally follows these kinds of salacious sort of pop culture of the moment kinds of stories.
Right.
You know? I mean, you and I, we'll go back and forth a little bit, but I mean, it captures our imagination for 20 minutes before the next thing comes about.
Yeah.
So I don't get overly invested in it. And this actually in the moment was one that I was pretty interested in.
Yeah.
Probably because it hits, you know, the right in the sweet spot of the Venn diagram of it was related to football. It was related to Notre Dame, which I have like a general distaste for as far as how much bandwidth they seem to suck up in the college football space relative to how good they actually are.
Right.
And well, a player too, who was right in the middle of the same kind of sweet spot of, in my view, maybe not being as good as everyone was sort of pretending he was.
Yeah, so, that he was that he was being lauded for being this incredible football player, and how much of the story of him and his girlfriend that had died had to do with his Heisman Trophy. I'll say I've always got a natural skepticism of really good college inside linebackers because that are on really good college defenses because they get a lot of stuff funneled to them.
Yeah,
and I mean sometimes they end up being Ray Lewis. But more times than not, they end up being guys that aren't quite as fast as they need to be, and they can't get that same kind of production in the NFL. So I was looking at it from that perspective too. And I think that that's one thing that this documentary does, which is I think they, without coming right out and saying it, I think they make it look like Manti struggled in the NFL just because he was so traumatized by this experience, where I think it was more complicated than that.
I totally agree. Yeah. I think that, you know, as all these documentaries are wont to do, they have to, I don't even want to say they have to, but they tend to lean into simplifying what otherwise is a pretty complicated story, right? So they they really want to use that as a crutch to just make it a little easier to digest, when in reality, you know, I think most people probably were realizing that that story certainly didn't help his brand.
Yeah.
But he wasn't drafted, you know, first overall for a lot of reasons that weren't just because of that.
It was more than just threat. Right. So, okay. So this is the big revelation from all of this for me, to back up a little bit for anybody that hasn't seen it and doesn't care about spoiler alerts, because this is going to be all spoiler alerts here. Rona Haya Tuiasosopo, right? Was that pronouncing her name right? His name?
You're coming to the wrong person for expertise on Polynesian, complicated Polynesian multi-vowel names.
That was the original Rona Haya Tuiasosopo was the original kid that had catfished Manti Te'o. In the documentary, you learn very early in the documentary that is now Naya Tuiasosopo. He's transitioned into a woman, so it's now Naya Tuiasosopo. So I think just that, which makes it easy, I think we'll call her Naya. Just know that if we're saying Naya, we're talking about Renaya, who transitioned to Naya. And that's a shock to everybody, or a surprise to everybody, who in this documentary, as they're interviewing Manti Te'o and his family, they're not aware of it either. They explain that early on. So none of the people in the documentary are aware that the Naya has transitioned into a woman. And the part that I didn't realize and didn't know, and I guess I'd never followed up on, was I kind of always thought that it had been some kind of a conspiracy to get Manti Te'o, and that somehow this was a prank played by Renaya. And I did think that there were actually like two or three other people that Renaya was working with, because at the time it was so confusing when all that was coming out. When it turns out, it was just Renaya, and all these other people were the Lene was the alter ego, and like Renaya was there as like one of the accessory characters, even though it was Renaya playing Lene. It's very confusing. So
no, I agree. That was kind of my take too, is I thought maybe it was two or three people that were working together to make it happen.
Yeah, I thought it was all a setup, or it seems like Naya always felt that, you know, she was trapped in the wrong body, the wrong identity, all that. And that she would reach out to people online and form these relationships, but then cut them off when it came time to get to know somebody. So with Manti, she did the same thing, except that it's Manti Te'o. I think from her perspective, she's saying she fell in love with him. And I kind of, there was part of me that was really starting to feel a lot more empathy for her than I would have thought. Until you get to the part where, like, where she decides that the best thing to do to break it off is that on the day that Manti Te'o, the day Manti Te'o's grandmother dies, she also fakes her own death. That was the part where I lost it, and I didn't know, okay, whatever your reasoning is, or however you were motivated for this, that's about the most messed up thing you possibly could have done. No matter what. And she, I guess to her credit, admits that and says it was awful and she doesn't want to do it. Know why she did. But it makes me skeptical of her other intentions. And the fact that she also kind of continued to torment him afterwards.
Absolutely.
When it got even worse. Okay. So did you feel, did you have to kind of reassess your understanding of the situation in the same way?
You know, I did, insofar as to the point where you first mentioned, where it really was the brainchild of one person and executed by one person, right?
Yeah.
So now you're kind of looking at it through that lens. And that also means that the sole accountability and responsibility for the entire cluster F of a situation rests with just Naya, right? And so it became a matter of, how bad do I really feel? So, you know, kind of midway through that first episode, they're playing the music and they're going through the cuts and the edits and trying to generate, I think, a level of empathy for the viewer. And to be totally honest, I was flirting with it, but I never got there because at every point that was remotely pivotal, where she could have either not even come clean, but just stopped, just moved on to something else. She instead dialed it up another notch.
Yeah.
And made it more about her, brought more attention to herself, made it more. And I'm like, now this is someone who, even as, you know, a decade later, however long it's been about that, where you're thinking, okay, is this someone who's reconciled fully with what they've done? The answer was, oh no, I felt bad. I realized that I didn't do something right. But then she tries to rationalize it and tries to be like, well, yeah, but I really loved him. Or yeah, but I just knew he had so much stress. He had so much going on that he didn't. And I'm like, nah, this is, you weren't making those decisions in that moment.
Right.
Because
right.
you cared.
Yeah. Yeah.
You were doing it for the exact wrong reason, which was because you wanted to exploit the attention. You wanted to be part of this. It rings like hollow to me, and someone who still has definitely not completely appreciated just how much they threw everyone's world into chaos.
Yeah, she really messed him up. Okay.
Oh man.
Now Manti Te'o, it's funny because it seems like there was so much reaction from people who definitely were like super harsh at the time, or you know, thought mm-hmm. that Manti was in on it or something. The one guy that actually kind of annoyed me when he tweeted this out, Thor Nystrom, who's some kind of sports media guy, he said, "We all owe Manti Te'o an apology." And that annoys me because I think that assumes that everybody thought that Manti was in on it, or that right. they were just making fun of him relentlessly. At the time, I actually stood up for Manti Te'o somewhat. I made Manti Te'o jokes, don't get me wrong. But I actually come out of this documentary kind of a little less sympathetic for him, just because there were points along the way where
yes.
he easily, for one, it's very clear in the documentary that he was not all that into Naya by the time of her supposed death, mm-hmm. By the time of Lene's death. Right. Like he was that was a point of strife within the relationship. So I don't know how it happened and which PR people at Notre Dame realized how much this could blow up and be a good thing for Manti Te'o. But he really, I got the framing it as his girlfriend dying, as opposed to framing it as just a close friend of his dying or something. Cause she was, I'm not buying that he thought of her as his girlfriend at that point.
No,
I'm at all. Either. Like he was talking about how he wasn't returning her calls and he was off, you know, enjoying all this attention that he was getting. So he comes off in this documentary like kind of like the weird, bewildered facial Simpleton. Expression that he always had in college. Yeah. That's how he got like it, at the beginning. And by the way, right now he's like devastatingly handsome. He looks like a completely different guy. He's got his hair is all coiffed up. He's got a chiseled face. This documentary did good things for the Manti Te'o brand currently. But when he was in high school, he's this huge star in Hawaii. He gets a scholarship offer to USC. It's his dream to go to USC. His father says, "Look, they just play on it first." So he's saying, "Okay, Heavenly Father, please, you know, I just want to be sure. Give me a sign. If not," and then his sign from God about whether or not he should go to USC is when he runs into his mentor.
Yeah.
And his mentor says,
who was part of the church too, right?
I was a little bit unclear of that.
Yeah.
And like in Polynesian culture, they call each other, they call guys they respect uncle, you know, and nephew. So he kind of calls him uncle. So he's got that kind of a relationship with him. But the mentor says something to the effect of, well, you could go to USC and be, you know, just another one of the great Polynesian football players that's played at USC, or you could go to Notre Dame and be the only Manti Te'o, or the only, or the first Manti Te'o, because no Polynesian kids in their right mind from Hawaii want to go to a Catholic school in the Midwest, right? Yeah. Right. So he goes to Notre Dame and he's miserable. He's awful. He's lonely. He just feels isolated. And the whole time I'm thinking, this is what my thought is. I'm not accusing anybody of anything, but my mind went to, okay, well, like somebody paid that dude, right?
100% Notre Dame, like, or at least got a voice in his ear.
An alumni. Like, I feel like, I mean, because that's a story as old as time, or at least college football, when the trusted mentor gets a bag from a booster or something.
Like out of blue chips.
Yeah, like I was kind of hoping that was going to go somewhere in the documentary. Because Manti, I don't know enough about religion, Drew, but I always thought like a sign from God is usually an act of nature or some extreme coincidence or something. It's not like the guy who you respect giving you advice. Like, right. How hard is that to interpret? That's not God giving you a mysterious message or, you know, sending it down on the wings of an angel. That's like a dude you already know telling you, hey, you should go to Notre Dame. Sign from God.
Well, that's why, like, if you can't really fully appreciate this documentary objectively, if you're not taking into account that, like, he's a simpleton, and they're ignoring the documentary almost completely ignores the fact that he is a pretty simple guy in my view, from what you see, and that religion and faith is a huge piece of how he was able to be completely objectified. I mean, because that's what happened.
Notre Dame, like, kind of lifting him up.
Notre Dame making him a messiah, a mentor for the entire program. His own, what looks to me like, I'm happy to just be a total armchair therapist over here.
Yeah.
But, like, he's got, like, a weird messiah complex going on where every decision he makes has these epic ripples that just emanate out to the rest of the world around him. Uh-huh. And, you know, to some
still
extent,
to this day,
I get why, but still,
right.
Still,
like at the end of it, the end of it, like, we'll jump to the end. It's he basically has learned to deal with this by, understanding that he needs to be a beacon to all these people. And he has to ignore the people who might have sent memes about him or there to make fun of him, which I understand. Look, I'm not downplaying how hard it must be to deal with something
not
like this, but I do think it's a lot harder for him because he does view himself the way you're describing.
Like, exactly.
So it's not a Bill Buckner moment where, like, crap, this sucks and I'm going to hear about it the rest of my life. It's I was the chosen one. And now look how far I've fallen.
I feel like it wasn't acknowledging the humility maybe that would be the healthier way to kind of move through it. It's instead saying, no, you know what it is? I actually did impact these people in the most prolific way possible.
And
it's like, oh man, I don't know if that's actually the right way either.
I think he needs to learn how to laugh about it a little bit. Like, dude, if you can't recognize the humor in the situation, that's why I get for all the people acting like they need to make apologies or they need shame on us. Shame on us for turning this hilarious situation into an hilarious situation. Dude, it's freaking hilarious. There's no denying the humor in this situation, in the concept of the stud football player having an invisible girlfriend. This is what every kid in
who
high died, school...
Who died, by the way? Who died?
Every kid in high school who feels a little insecure or whatever makes up his invisible girlfriend that goes to another school. Like, that's why it's so funny, is that this is the captain of the football team doing what, like, the most insecure kid that just doesn't want people to know.
It didn't happen for a month, right? Yeah. This didn't go on for 3 weeks. This went on for years,
and he didn't
until it ended in her dying, and then, I'm sorry, being resurrected, which is the biggest spoiler alert.
My dad works in B2B marketing. He came by my school for career day and said he was a big ROAS man. Then he told everyone how much he loved calculating his return on ad spend. My friends still laugh at me to this day.
Not everyone gets B2B, but with LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people who do. Get $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/results to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/results. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be.
It's not just about watching the game. It's about betting on it. I'm Mike Valenti, and on Cash the Ticket, Jim Costa and I break down every college football and NFL matchup like it's the last game we're ever going to watch, from the best bets to the sneaky underdogs. And of course, as my co-host likes to say, the value. And the one thing we're not going to do is pretend we're professionals. We have fun with it. It's an entertainment product, and it makes watching games a hell of a lot of fun. So Cash the Ticket, follow it in the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
In life and recovery, every day is a little different. Embrace the good days, the not so good days, and the challenges, and acknowledge how you overcame them. Find the path to recovery that works for you. Learn more at cdc.gov/stopoverdose.
Okay, this messiah complex gets deeper then too. I'm glad you brought up how long it went on. And I know the way I presented it, it was like he made her up. He didn't make her up, but that's the dynamic that's funny about it. But the fact that you can tell as his parents, as his best friend, as these other people are talking about the situation, there was definitely a part of them that held back from saying, Manti, what the fuck? Like, no, dude, you haven't even met her. What the hell is wrong with you? There was a part of them that held back because they viewed Manti as the chosen one. That, like,
completely.
Yeah. Like, well, I don't know. He's
they all of, were complicit. Everyone in that bubble was complicit.
I don't want to say meal ticket, like in a financial way. But I mean, like an emotional meal ticket, but where like this is the guy who's like, we're riding on his chariot. We gotta like, let's not talk about the emperor having no or no real girlfriend. We
They seem to me like they like we've had teammates like this, right? Where you have this teammate or someone in your bubble who you just kind of know is just maybe they're a little out to lunch, like they're not fully there, and you know them well enough to appreciate that. They function best in a certain kind of headspace or a certain kind of way. And they all kind of knew, hey, he just tends to do well when he's kind of got someone on the periphery who's maintaining his interest and he's not going out. Like, what is he doing with his social life there anyway? So they're just like, look, it's keeping him happy. Like, let's just kind of keep this guy. You know what I mean? Like, I have had friends like that. And you kind of just go, look, this isn't the kind of guy, if he's the sort of person that's susceptible to that kind of influence, you're not going to fix it by explaining to him that it's like he's already in a big way going to struggle. So
I think the part of it too is that we're kind of in a time in society when, as Manti and a few other people say, they weren't familiar with the term catfish at the time. I don't think I was familiar with the term catfish. I was aware of fake online personas. But there was that. There was, I think, the reality that a lot of people had meaningful. That was when people were first starting to have meaningful online relationships where, okay, wow, yeah, somebody can mean a lot to you emotionally without actually being physically present. So in the murkiness of all that and, you know, a generation gap of parents not quite knowing how their kids are doing things or dealing with things and they're living 3,000 miles away, that part is understandable. Where I did empathize with Manti is if I put myself in that situation when people are saying things about you that, and I'll say this, like even when he knew that, even when he thought that Lene was real, I feel like he should have known or understood that, wow, people are making this into something much larger than it was.
Right. Yeah.
And, but it seems to be working out pretty well for me. So what do I do? And that's before he knew she was fake. Like, how do you actually say, like, hey, everybody, by the way, thanks for all the sympathy and support. But I actually, you know, we were kind of on the outs anyway, and I never actually met her. So, you know, back off a little bit.
Well, and it goes back to that moment where it sounded, tell me if you think this was your impression of how it went, but it seemed like maybe that's what he was doing.
Yeah.
And then Lene, quote unquote, Lene sensed that he was pulling away and then invented a horrific car accident and cancer.
That's right. Yeah.
To pull him back in.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And what was interesting is that he, back to the Messiah thing, maybe, is that he in that moment decided to, instead of evaluating the situation for what it clearly was, he looked at it as an opportunity to be that much more of a Messiah, because he goes and he describes in detail how she just kept saying his name and speaking to him brought her back to life.
It was just him that
really called her back from the other side. It was just kind of like so dramatic as to be insane.
That's the part though, there I was a little bit, I didn't quite get, and this speaks to what you're saying about how documentaries, they have to simplify things because they, you know, compress years down into 2 hours.
Right.
So I think that the fact that two things were happening. One, she had been in that accident. She was the guy that she would respond to. Mm-hmm. Lene, you know, quote unquote, Lene would only respond to his voice. But at the same time, also, that was in the same time frame, seemingly, when he was pulling away from her and she couldn't get a hold of him. So I don't know how much of, I don't know how much to believe about him saying that he was on the phone with her every day or for extended periods of time or anything. I don't know how much of his, whether it's him actively misportraying it or just not really keeping a good memory of events, like how it's possible.
He's 20, right? He's probably like 19, 20. playing football, you know, going to Notre Dame, not going out, not doing anything else.
Yeah.
So he's probably pretty dialed into it. And then at the same time, I could see where he's like, okay, she doesn't want to meet.
Yeah.
She doesn't want to actually see me. There's always issues with FaceTime. Yes, I'm an idiot, but also, you know,
what if
I eventually want to see my girlfriend and then she gets in a car accident, to pull him back in.
But when was the car accident? I thought the car accident was still, I thought he started treating her like dismissively even after the car accident. Like it was, it's because this was a several year relationship too.
Yeah,
Misconceptions I had, I think, was that it must have all happened over the course of a few months or something.
Yeah, same. Yeah.
Where it was like they had actually had a long-term deal. I don't know how she kept up with the story that it was a bad internet connection or any of those things.
Yeah.
Like anytime they would try to FaceTime.
Right.
Unless she just, maybe she just said that they lived in a real rural area or something.
But you can see that. I mean, it's like if they're all in that bubble and he knows what she knows what his world looks like and how to manipulate kind of the nuances of the Polynesian culture and faith and everything else.
Yeah, that's true.
You can get a lot of mileage out of forcing someone to have to confront you about your dishonesty because they don't want to do that. They don't, you're using that faith to make them uncomfortable with confrontation.
That's what a lot of people, just because, you know, my brother through rugby knows a lot of Polynesian guys.
He's
played and coached a lot of Polynesian guys. And then, you know, you and I through football know several, at least, Polynesian guys. And that was kind of a common theme that I would hear from those guys as we talked to it about is just the dynamic of family and trust and being dependable and everything in a lot of Polynesian culture is just so strong that it's really hard to understand Manti's feeling of obligation necessarily unless you grew up in that. So that part of it, I'm trying not to be too harsh on Manti, but I think there's a little bit here because I know what you're going through because you already had that same feeling like, okay, people are making too much of this kid as a football player back then.
Right.
And now I can see you feeling it being extended to, all right, wait a second. People are letting Manti off the hook a little too much.
I mean, a bit. I'm just also, you know, it's one of these things where we've seen so many of these documentaries now that have a tendency to sort of, either rebrand or, you know, what's the word? Like kind of refresh someone's image.
Right.
And I don't necessarily think that's exactly what this is doing, but it isn't fully acknowledging he's complicit.
You know how they're doing it. That's messed up is they're making it look like people universally thought that this was a hoax. By Manti Te'o. They framed it almost like all of the media and sports media were saying that Manti concocted this hoax. And that is not the way I remembered it at all.
No.
And I think there were questions initially. And even that's how the documentary does it. Even some of the bigger names that they use, some of the people they show, it's them asking the question like, okay, well, wait a second. Was Manti in on this? Is he like, and then when they found out that Naya was a male, is Manti gay? Was they actually racial? So they're asking these questions. But that was in the initial moments or, you know, the first few days or weeks when there really wasn't a lot of information about it. And part of that's because Deadspin wanted to get the scoop. And you and I think feel the same way about this. Deadspin and their role in this story is one that it feels like Deadspin tries to. And this was how I felt about Deadspin at the time, back when they were a viable website, was that they tried to make themselves out as being a little bit more noble than they actually were. Like they like to present themselves as fighting for truth, honesty, you know, free from spin, free from favors given to them by athletic organizations. But they also, they're kind of just like trolls who wanted to break things. And that's how they come off in this story. I don't think they treated it as delicately or with as much of a demand for accuracy as they act like they did.
I agree. And I felt that way too. I felt like, you know, even the way it's presented, it's a bit like you know, it came from a hot tip line that essentially came out of nowhere. And it, we're going through it, and the way it's presenting some of the, you know, like when you watch some of these movies, like it's like All the President's Men or Spotlight, where they're just, you know, nonstop dedication to the journalistic cause, and they're reaching out to all these people. And I'm like, kind of seems like they just were Googling where
they were doing a reverse image search.
The car accident was with a reverse image search. It didn't feel that rigorous to me. I sort of was like, well, I could find out if this woman died very quickly 10 years ago. Yeah, it wouldn't be that hard.
No. See, that's where, okay, because I disagree with you on that. I think that if that just by virtue of them doing that, and it only being, as the one researcher said, you know, it wasn't this huge team or anything. It was an organization with 8 total employees, and mostly it was me and this other guy going back and forth with each other with text. I think it displayed that how little actual
work had been done. Right.
And so all these other news organizations with these vast resources never bothered once to like figure out like, hey, where is this Linnea Kukui? And maybe we could interview her family. Because I'm guessing at least some of those organizations tried to interview Linnea Kukui, the false identity, Linnea Kukui's family, or tried to get that angle on the story and couldn't find her. So like, what did they do? Like somebody out there, there had to have been several people who were sitting out there on that story wondering exactly what was going on.
Yeah.
And then especially when they
like were just, there really was an almost nonstop campaign to promote how sympathetic the whole entire situation was and put Manti in this light that it's how he got the Heisman. I mean,
He got second.
I'm sorry,
second.
I didn't mean get it. I mean, it's how he got all the notoriety going into it, all of the attention, I almost want to feel like it's kind of why Notre Dame kept getting placed so high in all the polls. Like, I was just like,
I know
that. Not that good, guys.
Well, this myth of Manti Te'o, the linebacker, I really like, I would watch him and I didn't get what all this astonishment over his skill was. It really he looked like a middle linebacker. You see him all the time. They're super, they got high football IQ, good technique, you know, but they're playing on a team where guys are covered. Quarterbacks are trying to throw into zone coverage with well-covered receivers, and he knew how to get into lanes, and he's making a lot of tackles because he had a good front seven around him, but he just didn't look fast at all. And so it was very easy, though, once that narrative was
dynamic,
built. So once that narrative was built, it was easy to pretend to yourself like, oh, wow. So it must be because of all the stress of this, of him not playing football well, of all this other stuff that he stopped playing football well and apparently couldn't run in a straight line for 40 yards fast because he was duped by an air.
Which, you know, I mean, let's be real. I think you and I both have been on the record multiple times kind of dismissing how relevant sometimes the 40 can be and all those things. But it's like, it does support the, what your eyes see, you know, during the games. Right. I mean, it passes. Well,
let me see what, cause like, honestly, there's a slow 40 time, but then there's, hey, you're the best inside linebacker in the country. What'd you run in the 40? 4.82. Like, that's, come on. I mean, that's slow.
That's fast offensive lineman.
Yeah. I mean, for somebody that's being talked about like he's Ray Lewis or something.
Totally.
There's the Jerry Rice for, but quick tangent. So Jerry Rice in his 4.740, that gets cited a lot. I got to feel like anything from the 1970s and early 80s is still like, was that, I don't think he went to the combine or anything. That had to have been somebody on not a hand timer, but like the one with the dial and everything, you know?
Yes. Where you click it.
Mechanical.
Yeah, exactly.
So, this is what I feel about Manti Te'o. I feel like he needs to actually take, Even though at the end of the documentary, he acts like he had never forgiven himself, and then he realized he had to forgive himself, which would suggest that he had been taking, if anything, too much ownership of the situation.
Correct.
I don't think he's ever actually taken ownership of the situation. And I think he's got to, at some point, acknowledge, okay, these memes are funny because there's just some funny shit, man, from this
stuff. Dude, those people, but I'm telling you, I mean, especially people in that space, and I just mean, you know, really engage with the church and in faith, yeah, really engage with that culture specifically and everything else. That's kind of deep self-reflection with also like a strong sense of humor is rare. I mean, they just don't really want it, because if you go that deep, yeah, and you're really looking at it, now you got to ask some even harder questions like, wow, am I not actually a Messiah? Oh, is that even a thing? I mean, it's just like, that's real uncomfortable for those guys. And on top of that, like, something that I get why it's uncomfortable in the documentary, didn't really even want to parse with it at all, other than showing that people were hypothesizing about it, but his sexuality.
Yeah.
I don't care one way or another whether he's gay or, I think most people actually don't give a shit if Manti Te'o's gay.
And it really wasn't, you know, because people are acting like, oh yeah, back in, what year was it? 2012?
11, maybe?
Back in 2011 or 12, that was the kind of stuff that people talked about. And like, right. No, everybody was pretty clued in, like, about everything at that. That wasn't
right.
That wasn't 1967.
No, not at all.
John Wayne being interviewed about Manti Te'o. Like,
right.
They treated it pretty delicately, you know.
They did. I don't remember it being that. Now, don't get me wrong. People, there's a lot of people out there in the world, and they say some terrible things, and they're on the internet, and that's how it works. But the broader conversation that really was paying attention to it, it wasn't like he was relentlessly being bashed for being gay. It's a pretty natural thought. To believe that, like, this is a dude who found a convenient beard.
Yeah.
He never had to talk. Like, that's not
especially a super religious story. Right. And it was like, they're asking that question. Like, or maybe some people had that theory, because you're finding out that, oh, he was having an online relationship with a relatively seemingly, at least from the photos, like a masculine looking guy was presenting himself as a woman. And that was where some of the disbelief came in. I guess people couldn't believe that Renaya was the actual one doing those voices and everything. He demonstrates. Right. Renaya did demonstrate to Dr. Phil.
So weird, by the way. That whole sequence was so weird.
The whole Dr. Phil part.
Oh my, that's where it kind of turned into like, oh, this, I don't remember it being quite this weird.
Because like, it crossed over into mainstream. And when it hits like daytime television and everything, that's completely out of our worlds.
Right.
Because we kind of, I think you and I are similar in that when it comes to the soap opera type stuff, we don't necessarily get all too clued into it in the sports world, unless it's a really compelling story. But we're definitely not like following all the In Touch magazines and or people topics and everything. So that, like, I don't think we realized quite how big it got, or the fact that it was on the nightly news.
I did not remember any of that. I don't remember them talking really even to Renaya. I don't remember that, you know, her doing those interviews or anything else or that entire piece of it. It got probably bigger than I realized afterwards.
So I expect there will be yet another follow-up interview to this. I do think that Manti Te'o, I'm shocked at how superficial I must be, because I feel like I do take him more seriously now that he has a really good haircut and
a beard.
He looks like he lost all that baby fat. He's not taking creatine anymore, probably, so his face isn't quite so puffy. Right. And he doesn't... I feel like, you know what it is? Yeah, because of the beard, he still has that kind of confused expression, but it works for him like it works for Keanu Reeves, where I think people mistake it for pensive.
Being pensive?
Yes.
being thoughtful?
Yes.
He's so introspective. I mean, my takeaway from it, too, from that whole documentary, is he is not an interesting guy. He's just not.
He's good looking enough now that he could stand on the beach, stare out at the ocean, and people think he's contemplating life and the universe and his place in it, instead of just like, I wonder what... Where do dolphins sleep at night anyway?
Yeah, exactly.
Well, actually, that's a valid question, though. That's a valid question.
It is. On the next podcast.
It brings me to another documentary I just watched, which is about orcas. And, okay, we'll have to watch that documentary and talk about orcas, which are actually not... They're called killer whales, Drew, but they're actually in the dolphin family. And they are the scariest by far of the dolphins and or whales, or I'd say humans too. They're scary creatures.
Yeah, they're making a real comeback right now. It's of the moment.
Are they?
No, I don't know.
Oh, okay.
I
mean,
you watch the documentary.
No, I don't know.
Seems like it.
Seems people are respectful.
We can make it happen. I mean,
they're not being harpooned.
We can make that happen.
Yeah, they're not being harpooned nearly as often. Okay, we're going to go a half hour today, but we got excited about Manti and his I think if anything, you and I, at the very least, can claim to be, unlike all these other frauds in the media, people who are actually think a little bit less of Manti even after this documentary, whereas the rest of the world is acting like, oh my gosh, it turns out that Manti Te'o was Jesus Christ himself, and we crucified him. We're the Roman soldiers who pinned him to the cross. Yeah,
we're thinking the right amount, both okay, before good. And after.
That's what podcasts are for, Drew. At the end of the day, we feel superior to most of these other people.
Yeah,
our listeners should feel the same as well. Yes, all of us here right together right now on this podcast, speaking and listening, can hug each other knowing that we're better than everybody else. I bid you adieu.
Likewise, thank you for validating my views and my ability.
My dad works in B2B marketing. He came by my school for career day and said he was a big ROAS man. Then he told everyone how much he loved calculating his return on ad spend. My friends still laugh at me to this day.
Not everyone gets B2B, but with LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people who do. Get $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/results to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/results. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be, to be.
It's not just about watching the game. It's about betting on it. I'm Mike Valeni, and on Cash the Ticket, Jim Costa and I break down every college football and NFL matchup like it's the last game we're ever going to watch. From the best bets to the sneaky underdogs. And of course, as my co-host likes to say, the value. And the one thing we're not going to do is pretend we're professionals. We have fun with it. It's an entertainment product, and it makes watching games a hell of a lot of fun. So Cash the Ticket, follow it in the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Trying to figure out what to eat for dinner yet again? With Norsides and bouillon as your not-so-secret ingredient, you can skip the drive-thru and do dinner at home. Nor Taste Combos provide a menu of delicious, affordable, and well-balanced meals that you can prepare in 30 minutes or less. Visit nor.com to get quick and easy recipe ideas for your home-cooked weeknight dinners. It's not fast food, but it's so good.
Recovery from addiction can take many forms, and quite often, it's a team effort. For those in recovery, having support often leads to a better outcome. And for those supporting people in recovery, they celebrate every milestone. Here's to family, friends, loved ones, healthcare providers, and community groups who are essential to helping people find their path to recovery. If you or someone you know is experiencing addiction, visit cdc.gov/stopoverdose to learn more about the various treatment options available.